It's time for Kennedy for Alabama, a political talk show where we discuss the real issues impacting our sweet home, Alabama. Your voicemails, comments, and texts are welcome at 251-272-9461.
I love this country as much, if not more, than you do. And don't you ever forget that.
And now your host, Robert Kennedy Jr.
Good evening to the listening audiences in Mobile, Montgomery, Huntsville, and beyond. My name is Robert Kennedy Jr., and this is Kennedy for Alabama. Tonight, we have three fantastic members of this evening's conversation team. The first, joining us by phone, is Dr. Jimmy Blake, who is the Libertarian nominee for governor of the state of Alabama. The second, joining us in the bottom half hour, is Mr. John Sophocleous, if I am pronouncing that correctly, who is a Libertarian nominee for United States Senate from the state of Alabama. And last but no wise least is our good friend Mr. Phil Bush, who is working the production board and keeping Kennedy for Alabama sounding good on the airwaves. Now for the headlines. The first headline is from Alabama Political Reporter. It reads, "How the Libertarian Party Stormed Back Onto the Alabama Ballot." It was written by Dr. Jacob Holmes, and published on the 3rd of October, 2022. The second headline is from CBS 42. It reads, "Libertarian candidate biking across state as party gets ballot access for the first time in 20 years. It was written by Maddie Baron-Timpfel and published on the 13th of October, 2022. And the final headline comes to us from AL.com. It reads, "Africatown film Descendant to get free screening at the Mobile Sanger." It was written by Lawrence Specker and published on the 17th of October, 2022. We are going to talk a lot about this film Descendant in the weeks ahead. We think that is an absolutely fabulous thing that continues to put a spotlight on our little section of heaven here in South Alabama. But before we do that, we have to get through the election season, and it is my sincere pleasure to go to the phone lines right now and see if we have our first guest there. Dr. Blake, are you on the line?
I am, Robert, and I appreciate very much you having me on.
Oh, it is very good to hear your voice. One of the things for the listening audience, when we came up with the concept of Kennedy for Alabama, we were approaching it from a Democratic perspective, and the challenge that we had when we were on the ballot of actually making sure that we had access to the airwaves. So that initial commitment that we had during our early days to create that venue for us to be able to hear from the Democratic nominees directly, by extension, if we are going to be individuals who wanted to lead by example, we realized that we had to provide that same type of access to our friends from the Libertarian Party as well. So with that, I am honored and humbled that you have decided to spend a few minutes with us this evening, Dr. Blake.
Well, I appreciate your perspective, Robert. I thank you very much for having me on.
So before we get into the particulars of the political, can you just take a little bit of time to introduce yourself to the listening audiences? And just by way of framing, we have the audience here in South Alabama that we will be broadcasting on Friday night. And then on Sunday afternoon, we have the audiences in the Montgomery market as well as the audience in the Huntsville market as well. So you'll be talking to folks all over the state. So just take a few minutes to introduce yourself to everybody.
Well, in brief, I grew up in Auburn, Alabama. My father was a professor in the agricultural school there.
Okay.
To high school and college there. In high school, I ran track and played a little bit of football, but I wasn't particularly good. And then I went to Auburn University. From there, got accepted to medical school, UAB in Birmingham.
Okay.
There, went to medical school on an Air Force scholarship. So after an internship, I went in the U.S. Air Force, and I was a flight surgeon in an F-4 squadron, Phantom jets, and had a wonderful time spending a couple hundred hours in the back seat of jets. And had a good time. Came back and started a family practice in Hoover, Alabama, in the greater Birmingham area. In the early 90s, I was chairman of the Libertarian Party in Alabama, and at that time I ran for city council in Birmingham, and I was elected to the city council and spent two terms. I left after two terms because I had committed to term limits for myself.
And, okay.
But I went there to sort of try to open up the politics in Birmingham. We had had a political machine that had run the city government for 20 years, and my tool, the tool that I used was what you'd call spotlight. I brought transparency to what was going on there. And after my 8 years, the machine was, none of them were in office anymore.
Okay.
I guess if there's one thing I'm most proud of in terms of my political life prior to coming back out of retirement was, I led the opposition to a dome stadium and a 1% sales tax, which I thought was a terrible idea, and fought off everybody. And I could go into more detail, but the bottom line is, as a result of that, people in the greater Birmingham area, the county, has saved over $75 million a year since, I think, 1998 in $1998 dollars. So that's several billion dollars that people didn't have to take out of their pocket to give to a special group that wanted to run a stadium.
Okay.
So that's kind of my basics.
Well, I appreciate that synopsis of your background. So a couple of things. First of all, thank you for your service. I am a veteran of the United States Navy, and we know that the reason why we have freedom is because young people volunteer to serve. And so we thank you and honor your service to our country as well. And
yours as well. You know, we tried to take on, in my Phantom jet, we tried to take on the Navy one time. we were supposed to tune into an AWACS airplane. I remember it so well. When we tuned into the frequency we were supposed to go to, the Navy was playing us, was playing music over that station. The only way we ever found the damn ship was when they lit us up with their radar, so I didn't want to take on the Navy after that.
Yeah, you know, it's a nice little fun a sibling rivalry, if you will, and it's fun to have those stories. So, okay, so, and then the other thing to highlight was for 8 years, you actually served on the city council for the city of Birmingham. Did I get that correct?
That's correct, and it was a very active 8 years, and I think the people in the Birmingham area probably still remember me.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for your service there as well. One of the things that we have learned on this journey during the time at which we came off the ballot was we had the opportunity to do some consulting work through Kennedy Strategic Communications for the city of Pritchard. And I think from that experience, just understanding how much happens at the municipal government level, I think all of you who serve in that capacity are absolute saints, because we know some of the larger offices, you can create a degree of separation. But when you are a local elected official, you are right there at the constituent touch point and having to deal with constituent issues every day. So thank you for that as well.
Thank you, sir. It was really a pleasure. I enjoyed my time there.
Cool. So the next question that I usually ask candidates before we get into anything with regards to the party specifically is, what is it that made you decide that you wanted to put your name on the ballot for governor of the state of Alabama? Just kind of what was happening and what were you thinking that made you make that decision?
Twofold. The legislature has rigged the game so that it's very, very difficult for a third party to get on the ballot in Alabama. And yet, and this was not my doings, but the young leaders in the party had arranged raised and spent about $300,000 to get the Libertarian Party on the ballot.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And they came to me and asked me, because of my name ID in the Birmingham area, if I would run for governor.
Okay.
In order to try to get the vote totals we would need to maintain ballot access for the Libertarian Party.
Sure.
That was the first issue and maybe one of the more significant ones. But the other issue is that, in my judgment, Robert, the Republican Party sometimes has a good message, but I believe they have betrayed the people of Alabama in a big way, and have not performed in terms of what they have promised, in terms of having efficient, small government. When you see that during the Ivey administration, Alabama state spending has gone up 35%, when we see a governor who sort of buys into what, in my judgment, was the globalist thing of really destroying 30% of the small businesses in the country in the state during the COVID pandemic, shutting the schools down, hurting the children in that respect, and then having the audacity to go online and go on the air and try to shame people who didn't feel comfortable taking what was a experimental vaccine, which we now know really isn't safe and hasn't been very effective. I was ready to go to war over that.
Okay, so let me just summarize quickly for the audience. So you talked about two things that caused you to essentially accept the younger libertarians who are trying to recruit a candidate with the name recognition, the gravitas, and the experience to be a good representative of the party on the ballot. You cited a number there that I found quite extraordinary, just to be honest with you, but you said it cost about $300,000 to jump through the financial hoops to get the Libertarian Party on the ballot. Did I hear that correctly?
That is correct, and it's somewhere between $250,000 and $300,000 that was spent to get. I mean, and gosh, what I would do with that money if I had it today. But that's what it took just to get on the ballot. We had to collect. We collected something like 82,000 signatures.
Okay.
To get on the ballot, and it's a very difficult, very time-consuming, and very expensive process.
So let me ask this question: who got that money? Whose pocket did it go into?
Primarily into people that went out and collected the petitions.
Gotcha. Okay.
You know, we had paid petitioners who did most
sure.
of the work.
Sure, yeah. sure. Okay. Well, thank you for that. And then the second thing that you mentioned, it's something that I've actually found pretty fascinating as a political science theorist. I was a political science major as an undergrad. And when we talk about what traditionally distinguishes a Republican candidate from a Democratic candidate, it usually has to do with how they feel about the role of government. Democrats have a tendency to want government to be larger. Republicans have traditionally wanted government to be smaller. And one of the things that comes up quite often, particularly given the fact that we are in a Republican supermajority state, is there are times when incumbent Republicans may or may not be aligning to that particular philosophy. And I thought it was interesting how you called that out with regards to several dimensions of how Governor Ivey responded to the COVID pandemic, where some of the behaviors may not necessarily have been defined as conservative behaviors. Any other thoughts on that before I go on to the next question?
Well, you know, the it's just hypocrisy. And, you know, one of the things that I want to say to my Democrat friends is that, you know, government really is run by the powerful for the powerful.
Mm.
Certainly that's the case in Alabama more than anywhere else. The people who ought to be for less government power ought to be the people who are least likely to get in positions of government power.
I got you.
Poor people, and right now that's largely the Democrats.
Okay.
So, you know, their position and my, if they're looking for giving government more power, they're only asking that they be robbed more, in my judgment.
I got you. Well, thank you for that additional explanation. So, okay, so let's now go on to the next phase of questioning. So everyone has priorities. So if you're fortunate enough to be elected and then you're inaugurated as the next governor of the great state of Alabama, what would your priorities be?
The thing that government at every level needs more than anything else is transparency. Somebody that will shine the light, tell the truth about what's really going on.
Okay.
That I think is underlines everything.
Sure.
The thing is basically economics and opportunities. We need to give to make Alabama competitive in the Southeast, we really need to give tax relief to the people of Alabama and to the businesses in Alabama.
Okay.
Third thing, when the Republican supermajority took over Alabama, our schools were about in the middle as it relates to math, how our students did in math.
Sure.
Now we're essentially last in how it's done in math. So we clearly need to make some real changes, some fundamental changes in the way we're dealing with the schools and educating the young people in Alabama. And I believe that we need to bring market forces to bear, like we would to try to improve anything else. And the best way to do that might well be through a school choice, a voucher program, encouraging homeschooling and helping people afford to do that, all of those things to try to jumpstart our educational system, because it's one of our biggest problems.
Okay.
And one initial thing, everybody ought to know this, but, you know, the justice system in Alabama as it relates to prisons is a crying shame. I mean, we're treating people like animals, and then how in the world do you expect them to behave when they get out? We've got a lot of work to do there.
Interesting. So, Dr. Blake, you mentioned four things. I'm going to go back through those here and ask some follow-on questions. But before I do that, if folks want to learn more about you or get in contact with your campaign or make a political donation, what's the best way for them to do that?
Well, the website, VoteLibertyAlabama.com, is probably the best initial way to approach it. And there you can make a donation, you can join the party, and you can certainly learn a lot more about me and other libertarians on the ballot.
All right. Well, thank you for that so much. So I'm actually going to go through your four priorities, and I'm going to do them in the reverse order of what you'd presented them. The first thing that you mentioned was the criminal justice system. And we know that we are operating under the spotlight of the Department of Justice, and that the feedback coming out of the Department of Justice, whether it was the current Biden administration or the prior Trump or prior Obama administrations, was they have consistently shined a spotlight on Alabama and said and told us that we're not quite doing what we need to do for any one of a number of different reasons. So in a Dr. Blake administration, what is it that you would do to correct our prison system that we're dealing with right now?
Robert, I lost you.
Dr. Blake, are you there?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So I'm going to go back through your priorities.
I heard the question about the justice system.
Sure. Okay. Sure.
Should I pick up there?
Please.
Well, first of all, you know, in order to do anything, we have to make some assumptions about people in Alabama. And my assumption is that people in Alabama are decent. And if they realize the conditions that people are going through in the prison and how that's being handled, I'm confident that they would be screaming that we wouldn't need the federal folks to come in here and tell us what's wrong with our prisons. I'm not interested in that.
Okay.
I'd like for the people of Alabama to realize what's going on. And then I think they would demand change. And you know, where do you want to start? I mean, they're very undermanned.
Mm-hmm.
Pay for the people who work in the prisons is far less than just a policeman in a city in Alabama, and that's not good. So we start there. Then we need to look at the way it's handled in terms of food service, medical service,
okay,
and so on. And I'm having a little bit of audio issue here, Robert, but I think we can carry on if you're okay.
Yeah, you're sounding fine on air. I just wanted to make sure that you're hearing the questions when I'm asking those questions. So let's leave.
Did I adequately answer that?
Absolutely.
Did I adequately answer that one?
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. Right. So now, specifically when it comes to schools, you put the list out, market forces. Homeschooling, et cetera, et cetera. So any more amplification on things that you think we ought to do to improve our school system?
Well, you know, some people want to regulate everything and think that you can. I mean, our school system, I compare to Russian agriculture. You know, every 5 years they would decide their agriculture wasn't working, so they would come up with a, a new five-year plan, which meant throw more money at it and regulate it more. Well, we need to do just the opposite of that. I can't speak to how much money we need, but we need to have it handled at the most local level.
Okay.
It starts with the parents. It goes to the local school board. And that's where a lot of it needs to take place. But systematically, we've been running the school system for the benefit of the school system, not for the students. And I think if we apply the money to the students and their parents and let them make some decisions, I think we'll come out a lot better.
I got you. Well, thank you for that explanation there. So you mentioned two more priorities, but before we focus on those other two priorities, I just want to give you a moment to distinguish Libertarian Party candidate versus what someone typically sees with a Democrat or a Republican so they get to hear it from you directly. So why Libertarian?
Well, the essence of being a Libertarian is that you believe in liberty. It is that government exists to protect the rights of citizens to their lives, and liberty and property, and that's where we are. And I say libertarians are your perfect neighbor.
Okay.
You know, they let you mind your business. They mind their business. If your barn catches on fire, they'll come over and help you, but they're not going to steal from you, and they're not going to vote for people who are going to steal from you.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for that explanation. You know, sometimes we on this side of the microphone want to filter, and we think it's very important for the audience to hear from you directly as to the reason why they would go in your direction versus some of the alternatives. So
you mean an honest journalism.
Hey, Dr. Blake, I tell people I am not a journalist. I'm just a guy that listened to a lot of these interviews be conducted, didn't necessarily like how they were conducted, and figured I'd just start doing it myself. So I'm just a guy.
Robert, thank you for the opportunity to be heard.
Sure.
That's critically important.
Okay, so we got about 3 minutes left in the segment, and I want to get through these last two priorities. So the other thing that you mentioned was economic opportunity with an objective of making us more competitive in the Southeast. So how would you go about that?
Let me hit the competitive first, okay?
Okay.
Florida doesn't have an income tax. Tennessee doesn't have an income tax. Mississippi is in the process of phasing theirs out. Georgia gave huge tax breaks. And what did we do in Alabama? We increased the gas tax.
Okay.
Okay, so it's, you know, that is about all anybody ought to have to hear to realize that something's really wrong here when we're in the middle of a recession. The other thing is, everything in Alabama is run for the benefit of special interests. We got 374 boards, which represents 374 special interest groups that are controlling, take that to mean limiting competition in their field. Now, that gives them a benefit, but it hurts everybody in the state of Alabama that's not in part of one of those. And frankly, even the people who are in those would benefit if we would open up the process and let market forces take place rather than regulate everything. And the best example I can give you is what they've done with this medical marijuana business.
Okay.
You know, they're going to give that to six or seven people who are going to make all the money, and they're going to regulate it in such a way that it's going to cost twice what it should to the people of Alabama.
I see exactly where you're coming from on that. So
special interest, that's all it boils down to.
All right. Well, thank you so much. I really do appreciate you providing us with your perspective on that. So we got about 30 seconds before I need to go to the break. So you got it. Leave your closing statement.
Well, let me just say this. We've got a lieutenant governor candidate, Ruth Page Nelson, who's a very sharp lady, who's running against only a Republican.
Okay.
For your Democrat friends, you know, what's to go wrong with voting for the Libertarian Ruth Page Nelson? And for the people who want small government, less government, honest government, transparent government, that message is to anybody. If that's what you want,
right,
vote Libertarian. Thank
okay.
you.
All right. Well, Dr. Blake, we really do appreciate you being so gracious with your time. We will continue to watch your candidacy with a huge amount of interest, and we'll look forward to talking to you here in the weeks ahead. You take care of yourself, okay?
Thank you, Robert. Appreciate the opportunity.
All right. So with that, we are actually about to go to our bottom half of the hour break. So we are going to be off for a little bit, and then we will come back with our next guest. You are listening to Kennedy for Alabama.
This question is for all managers. How often do you feel like Charlie Brown's teacher when speaking to your team? With Coached Up, the snooze fest is over. Founder and CEO, speaker, and corporate trainer, Levy D. King III is the answer to attention competition. For 16 years and counting, Coached Up continues to transform messages into life-changing perspectives for his corporate, civic, and nonprofit audiences. Coached Up provides learning and professional development solutions for departments across entire organizations that align and develop with the best of their culture. Clients echo Coached Up by helping to improve collaboration, engagement, and foster team synergy, creativity, and innovation. To reclaim your team's attention and build your organizational culture, call Coached Up at 251-298-7615 or visit Coached Up on Facebook at Coached Up to Success or online at CoachedUpToSuccess.com. That's Coached Up, the number 2, Success.com.
Ever wonder how some brands always seem to be right on target with the sweet spot of their market? Right on time and always top of mind. When choosing Dogwood Productions, these wonders become wonderful connections with your market, specializing in website solutions, new media strategy, and professional communications. Dogwood Productions has worked with some of the Gulf Coast's most prominent brands across many industries, including corporate, legal, hospitality, health, civic, restaurant, real estate, and the arts. And if you haven't visited Dogwood Recording Studios, make an appointment and turn that wonder into a wonderfully groovy experience. Call Dogwood Productions 251-476-0858. That's 251-476-0858. Or visit online dogwoodproductions.com for more information. Our customers agree. If asked, they could, should, and would do it again at Dogwood.
What do business, municipality, government, and nonprofit leaders have in common? The desire to win, to fulfill the mission for the benefit of their customers and constituents. That's why they call us at Kennedy Strategic Communication. At KSC, we help our clients develop strategies for targeting and converting their target markets. We provide branding, public relations, marketing, advertising, executive coaching, campaign and political support, and other business services. With over 25 years of experience in corporate, nonprofit, startup, and political settings from coast to coast, Kennedy Strategic Communication is here to help you capture your best customers. Learn more at KennedyStrategicCommunication.com or call us at 334-544-0510. That's 334-544-0510.
Welcome back to Kennedy for Alabama. Now, let's have a real conversation about what's going on in our Alabama communities. Once again, your host, Robert Kennedy Jr.
And welcome back to Kennedy for Alabama. For those of you who are just now joining us, during the first half of the program, we had a very informative conversation with Dr. Jimmy Blake, who is the Libertarian nominee for governor of the great state of Alabama. And now I am pleased to continue the libertarian theme for the evening and by welcoming Mr. John Sophocleous to the show. Did I pronounce that right?
Either one works, whether you want to do the English or the more Greekified. Thank you for having me on, Robert. Good day.
Hey, it is a good day indeed. And just as circling back to what I had said at the very beginning of the program, when we started Kennedy for Alabama, we wanted to create a place for, at the time, Democratic candidates to be able to come on and get their views to the voting public directly, without any of the traditional filters that happen when it goes through some of the traditional journalist funnel. And so I was very pleased to see that the Libertarians have fielded a complete set of candidates. And I am very, very honored and humbled that y'all wanted to share your views as well. So thank you so much for taking some time for us today.
And what a splendid idea to try and get things out unfiltered. And it's a little disappointing how few, and just in general, races have competition from both parties. I believe 50 of our candidates are in two-way races where it's just a Democrat and a Libertarian, and most of them are just a Republican and a Libertarian. I thought we were supposed to have competition and the ballot was supposed to be sacred and convey information. I just don't see that happening in the current situation.
Well, regardless of where it is that we ultimately stand on this political spectrum, we know that steel sharpens steel. So the more competitive that we are as a society in pursuing these elected positions, the better positioned we are to hold our elected officials accountable, independent of what party they end up sourcing from. So we
indeed, iron sharpens iron is one of my favorite scriptures.
Indeed. So hey, before we get into the particulars of your platform, just take a few minutes to introduce yourself to the listening audience so they know a little bit about who you are.
Very well. I grew up in Baltimore, Maryland, and not from a very wealthy background. So one of the things that really set the course of my life is I bought a Ford for $300 and all the pride I could swallow, and still own the car today. And that's what set my course to go to work for Ford Motor Company.
Okay.
So I was a warranty and policy administrator for about a decade and made enough money to take my vow of poverty and teach. I taught at Clemson, where I got my graduate degree, for about 3 years, and came to Auburn in 1992, and my lovely bride somehow lost her mind and followed me down here. And I'm probably most noted for my research and how much our economy devotes to redistributive activity.
Oh, wow.
And how
okay.
harmful it is. I've been a columnist for the Alabama Gazette for 13 years. We're about to have one of our anniversary events tomorrow, and I generally write on things that are political economy. Occasionally I show off my Greek Orthodox roots and will write something religious, but as a rule it tends to be economics.
Okay. Well, thank you for that explanation of your background. So the second question that I typically ask is, what is it that made you decide that you wanted to put your name on the ballot, and why the United States Senate race specifically?
Well, I heard you talking earlier. I'm a Lee County Commission watcher for 8 years, and I wholeheartedly concur with your sentiment that, I mean, what takes place at the lowest level is the most important and really does impact the quality of life the most. First time I ran for office was I was the faculty advisor for the Student Libertarians.
Okay.
And I told them, well, we're going to do something. And the project was, there was a special election. We dealt with the Secretary of State, got the signatures. And who was the only person that lived in that district? Me. So that's how I started my career.
Okay.
I've run for federal office. I was the guy who ran for governor in 2002. Where we didn't know who had won the office for about 3 weeks. When Sigelman was announced the winner, my box got bombed of hope you're happy you got the Democrat to win. And then Riley did his thing down in your area. He got deemed the winner.
Mm-hmm.
My box got bombed. And so not that I really cared which one won. I guess the short answer is that the Libertarian Party asked me to run for United States Senate. They thought I was the best candidate, and I agree. Out of my opponents, I am the best candidate, and I do like talking about federal issues and hold the Constitution dear. And if elected, I have a lot of things that I would like to interject at the most deliberative body, as it's often called.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and segue into the priorities. So, tell us, what are your priorities if elected?
The number one issue that's lobbied in D.C. is the tax code. Many of our ills start there. Article 1, Section 8, Clause 1 of the U.S. Constitution says taxes are to be uniform.
Okay.
I don't think that folks would argue we have much uniformity. It's something designed to pick winners and losers. Immigration is obviously a big issue that's hard to talk about in sound bites. One of my favorite columns I've written is toward a rational immigration policy. As an economist, I look at immigration as imported labor, and it needs to be subject to, you know, the same costs associated with bringing anything else into the country. Trade is not free. There's a whole bunch of costs associated with providing and maintaining a navy, dealing with piracy, customs officials, and agents of that sort. I guess there's so many others that are near and dear to my heart, so mm-hmm. I guess if I give it a more sort of global answer or macro answer, it's just trying to reduce government to those few enumerated powers. I believe that the generic citizen would be stunned and amazed at how much their lives would improve if the federal government did those few things that it's authorized to do really well, instead of all the things that it does that it's not authorized to do.
So I'm actually going to pull that thread just a little bit, because one of the things I think is important for the audience as they're listening to you is to understand what makes a libertarian a libertarian. And that fourth priority that you just talked about, which was limiting government to its enumerated powers and not necessarily things beyond that, I'd just love you to talk about that a little bit more and help them understand why libertarian versus Democrat or Republican.
Sure. One of the required readings on my syllabus is a copy of the United States Constitution, and I'll actually have them read excerpts of it and then have a quiz on it the next day.
Okay.
So for me, that you become an extremist when you go outside your authority. So as long as the federal government does what it's designed to do, I have no problem with it. I keep a copy or pocket copy of the Constitution with me at all times campaigning. And when somebody says, I'd like you to consider this or consider that, I say, great. Tell me, Article X, Section Y, Clause Z, where I'm authorized to do that, and I'm all ears. If it's not there, then I have no authority to do it, and I don't plan on doing anything of that sort.
Okay.
You can imagine you get sort of interesting stares or long silences on the end of the phone, and they say, well, nobody answers like that. Well, Robert, if that's not the way to answer that question, I don't know what is.
So just one thing, and then I'm gonna circle back to another priority. So if we go to the section of the Constitution that says the powers not given to the federal government are reserved to the states and to the people, are you suggesting that some of the things that government collectively is doing is outside of its scope as government? Or are you making a distinction between what the federal government is doing versus state government versus local, et cetera, et cetera?
Outstanding and great observation. I see the 10th Amendment as the capstone of the Constitution with respect to what the states are authorizing the federal government to do.
Okay. So. Got it. Do I still have you there?
You do indeed.
Okay. So before I go into the next question, if folks want to get in contact with you or learn more about your campaign, what is the best way for them to do that?
The best way is my website, www.sophforsenate.com, SOPHFORSENATE. And if you really want to suffer what I'm all about, you can read many of the columns I've written. Most of them for the past 13 years are up on the Alabama Gazette website, www.alabamagazette.com.
All right. Well, thank you for that. So I'm now circling back to your priorities. Now, we have been doing this season of Kennedy for Alabama since April. And you brought up a topic that I don't think anybody has brought up yet in any of the interviews that we've done, and that is the topic of trade. So tell us a little bit about what your philosophy is on trade and how you would approach that if you're fortunate enough to be elected.
Indeed. and trade, and specifically international trade, the federal government was designed to keep commerce regular among the member nation states and between other nations and this group of member nation states. Students come to my class, and I enjoy teaching freshmen and sophomores, seeming that think we've always had an income tax. The federal government was not designed to finance itself through a direct tax like the income tax. It was designed to finance itself through tariffs. As a matter of fact, in 1790, 99.9% of total federal government revenue came from tariffs. So this trade issue, and once again, I'm not talking about, you know, at the local level or whatever, I'm talking about trade among the states and other nations in this group of states, is really problematic, Robert, in that now we have so many federal things going on that we have no business doing. Mm-hmm. And the income tax is the biggest one.
Sure.
That embeds in the price of our export, i.e. it makes it higher, the price of what we're selling. We do not have a uniform tariff on everything coming into the U.S., so the price of the import is artificially low. And that's what's really messing up our balance of trade, although I don't hear anybody else in Congress talking about it that way, and I've already volunteered that, you know, I'm an economist. We tend to look at things differently.
Right. Well, hey, I'm going to pause you for just a minute. We're going to go and take a break, and then when we come back, we'll get into the meaty topics of the tax code, and then we'll come back to immigration if we have a little opportunity for that. Does that work for you?
Very well. Delighted.
Okay. So for those of you who are just now tuning in, we're having a great conversation with Mr. John Sophocles, who's a Libertarian nominee for United States Senate from the state of Alabama. He's gone through and presented a number of his priorities. Actually, I think there were a total of four. And we spent a little bit of time talking about two of those priorities, that being reducing government to its enumerated powers and some of his perspective on trade. So with that, we're actually going to go to our three-quarter of the hour break, and we will continue the conversation with the other priorities on the other side. You are listening to Kennedy for Alabama.
Ever wonder how some brands always seem to be right on target with the sweet spot of their market? Right on time and always top of mind. When choosing Dogwood Productions, these wonders become wonderful connections with your market, specializing in website solutions, new media strategy, and professional communications. Dogwood Productions has worked with some of the Gulf Coast's most prominent brands across many industries, including corporate, legal, hospitality, health, civic, restaurant, real estate, and the arts. And if you haven't visited Dogwood Recording Studios, make an appointment and turn that wonder into a wonderfully groovy experience. Call Dogwood Productions 251-476-0858. That's 251-476-0858. Or visit online dogwoodproductions.com for more information. Our customers agree. If asked, they could, should, and would do it again at Dogwood.
This question is for all managers. How often do you feel like Charlie Brown's teacher when speaking to your team? With Coached Up, the snooze fest is over. Founder and CEO, speaker, and corporate trainer, Levy D. King III is the answer to attention competition. For 16 years and counting, Coached Up continues to transform messages into life-changing perspectives for his corporate, civic, and nonprofit audiences. Coached Up provides learning and professional development solutions for departments across entire organizations that align and develop with the best of their culture. Clients echo Coached Up by helping to improve collaboration, engagement, and foster team synergy, creativity, and innovation. To reclaim your team's attention and build your organizational culture, call Coached Up at 251-298-7615 or visit Coached Up on Facebook at Coached Up to Success or online at CoachedUpToSuccess.com. That's Coached Up, the number 2, success.com.
Welcome back to Kennedy for Alabama. Now, let's have a real conversation about what's going on in our Alabama communities. Once again, your host, Robert Kennedy Jr.
And welcome back to Kennedy for Alabama. As we were heading into our last break of the evening, we were having a really fascinating conversation with Mr. John Sophocles, who is the Libertarian nominee for United States Senate for the state of Alabama. And we were having the conversation from the perspective of priorities. And we talked about two, reducing government to its enumerated powers, as well as how the government should approach the issue of international trade. There were two additional priorities that were mentioned as well, and I'm really looking forward to getting into this one with an economist, and that's the issue of the tax code. So can you give the listening audience your perspective on the tax code as it exists today and how you, as a Libertarian nominee, would approach that if you are fortunate enough to be elected?
Well, again, the tax code is the number one issue that's lobbied on Capitol Hill. So the appropriation side doesn't get anywhere near the action that the tax code does. It's not the children. It's not the environment, education. And what folks go to get from Congress is preferential treatment. So they want other folks to pay taxes, not themselves. And as I've said, this is my research that I've done the most on. When Dick Armey was the minority whip, I was working with him on how much our nation wastes on tax compliance and all the other things that have to do with our unwieldy tax code. And we had proposed a postcard-sized form. Mm-hmm. If anybody wants to look it up, it was called the Hall and Rabushka Plan, where anybody could do their taxes. Right, we're talking about another 87,000 IRS agents. You don't need them.
Sure.
Let's simplify the code to where your income's reported, everyone gets a standard deduction, and I suggest it be inflation adjusted. If you want to make it the poverty line or, you know, some income threshold where you pay no taxes. Back then, we were making the argument of it being $20,000, and that was a lot more money back in the 90s. And after that, everyone pays a flat percentage, a flat rate.
Mm-hmm.
So just to give you an illustration, if the threshold was $20,000 and you made $20,001, $1 would be taxable.
Gotcha.
And the argument that back then was the flat rate would have to be about 20%. So that individual would pay 20 cents in federal taxes of their $20,001.
Yep.
Dangerously close to 0%. What would happen is folks got into the higher and higher incomes, that threshold would pretty much just not matter, that first $20,000 or whatever that's non-taxable, and your effective tax rate would become about 20%.
Gotcha.
Now, obviously, a whole bunch of folks who enjoy tax avoidance wouldn't want something like that to come to bear, but if we're going to live in this 16th Amendment world and use the income tax as a way to finance the federal government, let's come up with something simple and uniform instead of the mess that we have today.
So I understand what you're saying at the theoretical level. What I want to make sure that I'm facilitating the conversation on is what happens at the practical level, right? So is it you are now sitting in the United States Senate and you are proposing a bill that would transition the tax code as it exists today to this flat tax, for lack of a better term? Is that the advocacy?
Indeed. And the nice thing back when Dick Armey was in the House as a minority whip, Article 1, Section 2 says all bills for generating revenue have to originate in the House.
That's right.
So mm-hmm. I would have to have somebody in the House willing to do the heavy lifting that Dick Armey did again and try and simplify the code. Some of this stuff is just, I'd like to see it back in the debate again.
Sure.
So we start walking away from this madness of what I see in the tax code and trade and just a whole bunch of other things that the federal government is doing it has no business doing.
Well, you know, it's amazing how we can very calmly and rationally discuss this issue in a public format, and how much easier it is to do that when we're not calling each other names or saying who's trying to destroy the country or whatever the case may be, you know?
Yeah, And I love your comment earlier about iron sharpens iron. I don't know if I have all the right answers. I know I've read the document. I've taken some to the United States Supreme Court, spent gobs of time and money basically trying to undo the Kelo decision, which transferred, you know, all sorts of wealth to Pfizer and other companies
sure.
that engage in eminent domain abuse. And I never could get anyone to tell me that my argument was wrong. And I'm more than happy for somebody to tell me, you know, Sophocles, you're just not reading this right or mm-hmm. understand the history of it. And you're right, that civil debate just isn't going on anymore, Robert.
Sure. So hey, we're coming to the end of the program, but I did want to give you a minute to a minute or two to talk about immigration. So what's your cut on that from a solution perspective?
I know it's hard to talk about it in such a short period of time. The Gazette column I wrote was toward a rational immigration policy. But effectively, anyone who wants to come in and they can get 1 year, pay the tariff on the imported labor and decide what that imported labor is at. And it doesn't matter whether the person who's coming in pays for it, whether their employer pays for it, to offset the cost of what's going on with respect to having this trade take place.
Mm-hmm.
In the Constitution, companies, you know, patents, copyrights have protection for 17 years. I argue the same thing with respect to imported labor. If you want to get your card and pay the tariff for 17 years, then you can get your vetting and decide to become a citizen. If you want to pay all 17 years up front, fine, get vetted and become a citizen. Currently, we have gobs, I mean tens of thousands of dollars per person being wasted on immigration attorneys
mm-hmm.
instead
yep.
of having a rational, uniform-type immigration policy. And nobody seems to bother or say anything about the immigration attorneys making gobs of money any more than, you know, all the tax accountants that are making gobs of money over our complex tax code.
Sure, sure. Well, hey, that is going to have to be the last word on this particular topic for tonight. Well, thank you so much for joining us on Kennedy for Alabama and sharing your views on the issue of the day and explaining what your priorities would be if you are elected.
Thanks for having me.
All right. You take care and be safe out there on the campaign trail.
You do the same.
All right. So just to summarize right quick, this episode of the program has been focused on our friends from the Libertarian Party. We had the opportunity to interview two of them. The first was Dr. Jimmy Blake, who's a Libertarian nominee for governor of the state of Alabama. And the second was Mr. John Sophocles, who is a Libertarian nominee for United States Senate. We're going to ask everybody in the listening audience, make sure that you put November 8th on your calendar. And regardless of who it is you decide to vote for, it is very important to participate in the process and to let your views be known. And just also remember, it's not only limited to the candidates who are on the ballot. There are also a number of constitutional amendments that are going to be there as well. So with that, we're actually going to end this show. Thank you guys so much for tuning in and continuing to provide us with your support. So until next time, I am Robert Kennedy Jr., and this is Kennedy for Alabama.